A collection of letters written to and from the iconic New Zealand painter Colin McCann sheds light on a special relationship that spanned four decades. McCann met philosopher and librarian Ron O'Reilly in 1938 when the pair were just 19 and 24 respectively. And they wrote to each other regularly, amassing hundreds of letters covering McCann's art practice, the contemporary art scene, ideas, philosophy and spiritual life. And now a selection of the letters, chosen by McCann scholar Peter Simpson, has been published in a new book entitled Dear Colin, Dear Ron. And it includes an afterword written by McCann's grandson, Finn. I'm joined by both Finn and Peter. Kia ora, good morning.
Morena.
Kia ora, good morning.
Peter, I guess, why was this a book you wanted to pursue? Because you've spent a long time doing this. What was it about it that felt so special and vital to you?
Well, I'd been familiar with Colin's letters to Ron for maybe 20 years and had often drawn on them for books that I had written about McCann. And they were particularly brilliant letters, I thought. And Colin seemed to be more open with Ron about his practice than with almost any other of his many correspondents. But I wasn't at that stage familiar with Ron's letters to Colin until 2021, when the Hocken Library very kindly sent me scans of all of Ron's letters, which were held in the McCann papers in the Hocken collections in Dunedin. And when I looked into Ron's letters, I found that he was a very distinguished writer as well and a significant thinker, and that the dialogue between him and Colin, which I was able to reconstruct by putting the two sides of the correspondence together, was absolutely fascinating. Fascinating about them as individuals and Colin's work, which Ron was deeply engaged in as well, and the whole art scene in New Zealand for nearly half a century.
Mm. So many interesting aspects to this, because of course now, for very many of us, the letter is really, it's kind of a dying art. It's something from a bygone age, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And such books as this will probably never happen in the future. Mm. I can't imagine the collected emails of of anybody, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it does traverse such varied territory as well, because, as you say, there is inevitably a discussion of Colin McCann's work. But also it's the anatomy of a friendship, which is traced across, four decades?
Yes, it was a very interesting relationship. They were not like each other. They were quite different personalities. Ron was a little older, 5 years older, and I think in the early days he was something of a mentor to Colin, and Colin would often ask his advice about practical matters and, should I apply for this scholarship and what do you think about, should I go for this job, that sort of thing. But from very early on, Ron was absolutely fascinated with Colin's painting and began collecting it almost from the beginning. And so this became a major topic of their exchanges. And it had a practical dimension too, because as a librarian, Ron eventually became a librarian at Lower Hutt and then later in Christchurch, he was able to facilitate aspects of Colin's career by using the libraries that he was working at as a place where Colin could exhibit his paintings. Mm. So some of his most important early exhibitions were held in libraries in Wellington and Lower Hutt and Christchurch.
Mm. And indeed, Ron suggests changes to Colin's art, which is pretty interesting, and even paints out a line on one of them. Is that right?
that was an unexpected aspect of the exchanges. He wasn't just a fan, you know. He was hugely enthusiastic about Collins' painting, but if he didn't like something, he would say so. And he is often, you know, quite blunt in his criticism. You know, I think this arm is wrong, or, you know, he would get down to specifics. And on one or two occasions, Collins actually suggested, why don't you paint out that line on a painting that you have in your possession? Or what do you advise me about this waterfall mural? Do you think I should change this bit of it or that bit of it? So that indicates the level of trust, I think, that developed between the two men.
Mm. And how illuminating did you find it to read about the art from Colin McCann's perspective? Because the letters are not so much written during the time that he's actually painting, it's they're ahead of time, or it's then after he's finished. What does that give you?
That's an odd phenomenon. Colin said several times that he couldn't both paint and write letters at the same time. He said the muscular control of handling a brush and handling a pen are so different that I simply can't write letters when I'm painting. So often he would paint in bursts, you know, maybe several days or several weeks on end when he'd be in the studio. And then at the end of such a period, he would often write a whole bunch of letters to the many friends that he kept in touch with. Ron was by no means the only regular correspondent. And sometimes, I remember one occasion, he says he had written, this is the ninth letter I've written today. That there's a sort of rhythm to the letters, that they tend to either precede or follow a period of intense activity in the studio.
Mm. And the families sort of come in and out. You can sort of feel them round the edges of the letters the whole time, can't you, on both sides of this exchange?
Yes, I think that there are quite a lot of mundane details of daily life with the family, but you wouldn't describe them as confessional letters, I think. They were men who had things on their minds which they wanted to share about the art world and Collins' art in particular. And family activities tended to be a bit on the margins of their correspondence, more particularly, I think, in Collins' case than in Ron's. Ron did sometimes treat Colin as a bit of a father confessor, but not really vice versa.
Mm. Finn, if I can come to you, Finn,
yes.
McCann-Jones, grandson of Colin McCann, and you write an afterword that I have to say I found really interesting reading it in the book. Your instinct on this was to say no. Why was that? You didn't want these published initially.
It's a very strange thing to... I guess I was kind of reflecting on this. Sometimes being a McCann, it's you know, growing up in the house. So William McCann is my father. And I must say also at this point, good morning, William. Good morning, Victoria. And to Matthew and Rachel, they're O'Reillys. They'll all be tuned in. There's a, you know, growing up in, even in my time, growing up in a McCann household, you know, was a bit like a railway station. You know, there were people always coming and going and talking about ideas and doing things. And this was a case growing up watching my grandmother and my father and my aunt kind of looking at all of that stuff. Sometimes I have to actually, and the family does, kind of work out how much time you want to dedicate to McCann. McCann can become quite a large part of your life if you let him. He's very, his artwork is full of, I like to call it latent energy. You know, there's a lot of people that don't understand his art, but they kind of feel the emotional resonance, or they can kind of understand there's something in there. And I think that these letters really prove that. There's a lot of thought, and just, you know, what Peter was saying about either painting is done or writing is done. These were, his painting practice was real. I mean, that's all I can kind of say to people, it's absolutely real. He believed he was here to paint, and he painted. And so, so I guess there's a lot of questions that remain unanswered, or there's a lot of kind of ideas that are encapsulated in these pictures. But going back to that that thing, it's the question is, sometimes it's very hard to know what is going to be unleashed. And I live a very close life, being a family member to the wider McCann family, and the kind of the sometimes the angst and the energy that this brings up. And when it's things like personal letters, I mean, imagine if you had your, you know, family's diaries or whatever published, you would probably want to look at them before.
What was it, though, that then changed your mind?
Conversations. Further correspondence and, talking with Peter and especially Nicola Leggett, who was the editor from Te Papa Press, just about, concerns or those ideas. And so that was, I guess, put into an essay and put at the end of this book. And it was a really interesting exercise. And I have to say, anybody with a whakapapa out there will get this. Sometimes you hold on to things that aren't yours. Sometimes you inherit stories, and you inherit energy, and you inherit mamai and so writing this essay for me was actually a really it cleared a path, and I realized a lot of the stories belonged not to me, but they belonged to another time. And it was quite a confronting but a really good exercise to find my own voice and see where I sit. And also at this point, I want to say, my cousin Peter Carr, we're working closely on the Colin McCann Publication Research Trust, which we are members of, and just, looking at what our generation can do with McCann and move in a positive way.
Those glimpses of family that I was sort of saying to Peter, you can, you sort of see them on the periphery. And of course, do you find that people kind of forget that behind Colin McCann and that public art and artist, there is a private family?
Oh,
actually.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I write about this a little bit. Like, when I was a kid, going to the art gallery with my dad was the most kind of wonderful thing, because we'd walk around the art gallery, especially if it was a McCann show, he'd just, point to a picture at Titirangi and point to the boat and talk about flounder fishing at night, or the other local kids kind of attaching themselves to the dinghy as they row around the headlands, and being in the bush. And I always thought it was, and then you'd read the label and it would just say, Otatori Bay or something, French Bay or something. And I had this secret information and these kind of wonderful things. Or, often my older cousins are definitely celebrated in the paintings. And so they're always just this kind of wonderful depiction of life. But it's really, and then, talking to my dad and my auntie, they remember the conversation, they remember the thing. So it's kind of inextricably linked to the family that sometimes you forget. I mean, even I forget that asking, what can be a very banal question, or even you talking about the fact that the family is on the periphery, that's actually quite a hard subject, because Colin did spend a lot of time with other people, and anything art. Colin just wanted to talk about art and do art and be art and make art. Even with his friends, like, it's really interesting, people that you like Williston, and you read these letters, even though they're friends, they're in competition. There was a fierce competition. And this is what I really enjoy about kind of looking at these letters. But also you see, and as Peter was alluding to, this kind of notion of self-doubt. So he was working very hard as an artist and finding time to go from making art to writing letters to then change your hand grip again, or your mental kind of capacity, and then work with your family.
And then, of course, these letters are our family papers that so many of us have, stashed away in the attic or whatever, in boxes. And you get very used to going through them, or seeing them, or seeing the handwriting. And then, of course, you're presented with these letters in a Word document. which, of course, I hadn't thought about that when they were being transcribed, that, of course, it comes to you in a very different format.
In a way, it's, I have to say, the mental, and I'm, you know, if you, I don't know, Google Collins' writing, if you haven't, it's very rhythmic, but it's also quite abstract. Mm-hmm. And so the mental capacity of trying to, you know, visually translate the written word into text in your mind has all been done, and it's here, and you get to sink into the ideas. Yes, and it's, I mean, it's a very strange thing having all of your, you know, letters down in the Hocken, and just, you know, engaging with your family life, because of course, like all of us, we like to get on with our own lives. And it's nice to know about your family and do these things. But I have to say, it's been, and I've been talking to, you know, my dad and my aunt, especially about, you know, dipping into these letters. And it's much like, you know, when you're a kid and people ask you what your parents do, and you kind of go, oh, you've got a vague idea that they work or something. And so we're reading these other sides of, you know, Colin's professional life, or even like when he finished at the being deputy director and, you know, keeper at the Auckland Art Gallery, moving over to Elam. And, you know, there's still kind of doubt whether he was good enough, or if he's going to get the job. And it's, these are those little things, I think, that there's those human stories. Even though you're reading an art story, there's so much that is relatable to the human condition in here. And so I'm finding it a really kind of lovely read. And also I'm finding there's a lot of family traits and little things in there. And I go, oh.
What sort of things?
Well, just, you know, like ways of thinking, ways of being. And even, I guess, ways of looking. And there's a few, as you go through there, you know, there's all these technical letters. And then there's what I like to call the late night letters, where you know that, the family's asleep and Colin's kind of writing. Mm. And he almost kind of enters into this kind of, you know, nebulous state. And he kind of writes these really kind of poetic and open letters. And especially his writing to, I think it's the very last letter of his in this book. And he writes about Mondrian.
Mm.
And he writes in this way, and he talks about, this is the direction that my painting must go. And you can kind of, you know, feel him entering into the space. Because a lot of people don't know, he only became a full-time painter in 1971 and at 52 years old. And then he dies at 68 years old. And that later period where he's free and he's out at Muriwai in the batch, and his artwork just kind of enters into this massive, this space. A lot of people find those paintings hard. You must start at the beginning, go on the journey with McCann, and you end up at the black paintings. But you can really see these letters kind of align with the thought, and there's these little, not cryptic, but kind of ways that you really see how McCann was thinking. And I guess for all of us, we read these and hope that McCann's paintings are going to become more explicit. But I think he frames in his letters, he never tells Ron anything kind of super specific. And even there's one or two times where Ron says, what is this white thing in the landscape? And he says, is it a shed? And Colin goes, oh, yes, probably. Or, you know, something very kind of aloof.
Yeah.
But it's it definitely, I think it's tuned my reading of McCann's paintings a bit more. And read my essay at the back. Mm. I talk about how McCann liked to kind of layer the meaning in his paintings, and I think it's all in these books, but it still requires you to consume it, the information.
What has it meant for the wider family to have a collection of these letters and to give that other perspective?
McCann family is very public in a way, I guess, in a private way. You know, I've grown up with my father doing radio interviews and floor talks, and, you know, Colin did floor talks, and you know he's all recorded of this and being here. So I mean, we've known that, you know, the collection's always been at the Hocken. We're constantly doing loan agreements and you know, I don't know, publication requests and things like that. And this is why the Colin McCann Publication Research Trust was set up, to take some of the pressure off the family. Mm. So I guess in a way it's something. I don't know, growing up, that McCann has always been in this space, and I think it's been very important to him to remain visible. And in a way, I mean, my dad kind of sometimes jokes about this. We're really lucky that Colin was found and in the end accepted by the public, because there's so many artist families out there that they do everything right, but society doesn't pick them up. And so in a way, we're very kind of, you know, grateful that he kind of is in this space. And his artwork, should you spend, there's still people that come up to me and are quite happy to tell me that they either love his work or the exact opposite. There is so much packed into there, and it's okay to feel an emotional response to a visual thing. But it can be quite frightening to a lot of people, standing in front of a massive McCann painting for the first time.
What's your favourite painting?
See, I do. I mean, this is a bit of a cop out, but I love the Titirangi period. And I mean, I like to say God disappears, and the family is together. They've moved up from Christchurch. They're in the bush, and they're experiencing the New Zealand, the Auckland, you know, climate. And there's just these beautiful, abstract, dreamy, you know, when you're kind of, you've got soft gaze and the foliage and the leaves and summer, and it's just, and down at the beach. But then equally, you know, I could say I'd like the late 40s. Some of that when he's looking at, you know, his religious period, but also the really interesting landscapes that go back to his kind of early vision, I guess, of a pure landscape. And then, you know, it's the beginning, middle and end, like a book, right? I mean, you can't, it's very hard to isolate one thing.
Yeah, it's not a very fair question, probably.
No.
Peter, just a final word to you. How do you anticipate people reading the book? Because inevitably, letters are not written usually with the intention of being read one after the next like this.
Yes, I imagine this book will have a specialised sort of a audience rather than a large general audience. Although I've been quite gratified by the interest that the media has shown in the book, but for anybody who's strongly interested in the visual arts, these letters are a treasure, because not only because of the intimacy with which Colin discusses his own practice, and he's such an intelligent man, you know, the intelligence just shines through the whole book. There's so much information about other people, you know, Wollaston and Doris Lusk and Louise Henderson and Pat Hanley and all the other artists who were active in the period. And of course, Colin had important roles in the art world as a curator at the Auckland Art Gallery and as a teacher at Elam. And he was in touch with all the young artists coming through, people like Rick Killeen and Robin White and so forth. So it really is a kind of, as well as being an intimate portrait, it's a fascinating portrait of an era, the whole middle period of the 20th century, which was when really New Zealand art, you know, matured and came into being.
Hey, look, thank you both of you for joining us. Ngā mihi nui. Finn McCann-Jones there, and we were also speaking with Peter Simpson. The book is Dear Colin, Dear Ron, The Selected Letters of Colin McCann and Ron O'Reilly.